happen beyond the massages, though the queen kept saying it was a shame she was married. When a knock came at the door, Alice frowned. She knew from the bond it wasn't Waldo. He was still somewhere in the city west of her. Alice suspected it was a messenger from the queen, inviting her to a shared bath or something. But when she opened the door, she instead found a blonde, yellow-eyed woman in white robes.
"May I come in?" Melissa asked.
Alice slammed the door shut in her face. Alice clearly heard the other woman sigh.
"I only want to talk to you, barmaid, nothing more.
We have nothing to talk about, and my name is Alice."
"I know what your name is, barmaid, and we have a great deal to talk about.
If you came here to see Waldo, he's not here."
"I know that. If you were, I'd have sensed him. I've quite a lot to say to him as well, but right now it's you I wish to speak to."
"Well, I don't have anything to say to you."
"I'm not leaving until I talk to you, barmaid. We can speak in private or through this door. It makes no difference to me."
Alice did not want to be alone in a room with Melissa, not only because the other woman was in love with her husband, but because she was a real white mage. Melissa believed all non-humans should be killed. Not the sort of person Alice would want to spend time with, especially in a place without witnesses. Melissa continued speaking.
"Shall we talk about what happened in the inn where we all first met? That rare vintage of wine you provided me with?"
Alice ground her teeth and opened the door.
"Thank you."
Melissa slipped into the room.
"We really don't have anything to talk about,"
Alice growled and shut the door. The woman was at arm's length. If she had to, Alice knew she could snap her neck or choke the life out of her before Melissa could work any magic.
"I disagree," Melissa said.
The woman faced her with back and arms as rigid as boards. Alice recognized the posture, as well as the overly polite tone. In her time working at the Inn of Lost Sighs, Alice had been on the receiving end of it many, many times. A wife or a girlfriend would come in and want to accuse her of trying to steal her man. Alice was always blameless, and the other woman never wanted to believe her.
"If this is about what happened back in Middleton, I want to say I'm sorry. It wasn't anything personal."
"You mean when you drugged me with love potion?
To be fair, you were threatening to kill my husband."
"I don't blame you for that. I held Waldo responsible. Obviously you were just his pawn."
Alice frowned.
"Thank you? Has Waldo explained to you the results of the love potion you gave me?"
Alice nodded.
"It's been working this entire time. You're still in love with him."
Melissa gave an uncomfortable shrug.
"Under normal circumstances, a love potion has a duration of a few hours, a single day or night at most. No one has ever heard of a love potion whose effects lasted this long. It is almost certainly permanent. Waldo created something completely unique, something most mages can only dream about. He is wasting his potential."
"You know what you feel is fake, right? I mean, if it had been regular potion, you'd be back to trying to murder him."
"Oh, I'm aware of that, believe me. If it were to suddenly wear off tomorrow, Waldo would be a dead man."
Melissa's hands opened and closed without her seeming to notice.
"The problem is that even knowing these feelings are false, I remain completely in love with him. It turns out my heart rules my head."
Alice bit her lip and imagined skewering the other woman with her claws.
"Well, since you love him, you must want to make him happy."
Alice was surprised when Melissa shook her head.
"No, I will do what is best for him, regardless of whether or not it makes him happy. Which leads me to you."
"Here it comes," Alice thought.
"You should leave him. It would be best not only for Waldo, but for you as well."
"Get out," Alice snapped.
"Let me explain the situation."
Melissa was unruffled.
"No, I'll explain it. I am his wife, and unlike you, my love isn't imaginary. That's the situation. Do you think I've never heard this before? Whenever a man made doe eyes at me, his woman would always come around and blame me for it. She'd want me to leave him alone, as if I was the one causing the problem. Well, dearie, I have news for you. I'm the wife now, and you're the one who's the problem. It's not the wife who gets out of the way."
"That's true, normally," Melissa admitted. "But not in this case."
"Our being married doesn't matter?" Alice demanded.
"No. There are far more important things at issue here. Let me explain something to you very, very clearly. Waldo's future lies with me, not you. I'm either going to bring him back to Avalon with me, or I'm going to kill him. Those are his only possible fates. Do you understand? There is no happy ending for you.
Alice's right hand twitched. She wanted to slap this girl until she was on her knees weeping.
You don't know a damn thing about true love. My husband is the most important thing in my life. All I truly want is to be with him for the rest of my days. I'm not about to leave him, no matter what threats you make.
I am not threatening you. I'm trying to be kind.
You call asking me to abandon Waldo being kind? It's better than the alternative.
Okay, now the threats start.
It is really very simple, Melissa said. I intend to bring Waldo to Avalon, so he can truly become what he pretends to be. He has already committed many crimes deserving of death, but I have arranged a pardon for him. He will be enrolled as a member of the Order of Mist, and all his sins shall be absolved. Members of my order live our lives only for the greater good. We are expected to make many sacrifices for the cause of unity, justice, and peace. One of these is that we are only permitted to marry other members of the order. The ability to use magic is very rare and needs to be passed on. The only way to ensure that is for mages to marry one another. Given the situation, I think it obvious who he will be with in the end.
Alice's jaw fell. She couldn't believe the temerity of this woman.
Let me get this straight. You're standing there and telling me to my face I should step aside so that you can marry Waldo.
Alice noticed as Melissa's hands began to tremble and her breathing got noticeably louder.
Do you think your love for him is so much better than mine? So much purer and true? Tell me, barmaid, if your breasts weren't so big and round, if your skin had a few freckles or pockmarks, if you were 10 years older or 50 pounds heavier, do you still think he'd love you? He loves you for your body, nothing more. What do you know about magic or duty? How could you even begin to understand what Waldo might accomplish if he were just given the right opportunity? With my help, he could do amazing things. What can you do for him other than warm his bed at night?
Melissa's entire body was beginning to shake. The woman took a deep breath and slapped her hands to her side. She stilled herself.
Forgive me. I did not mean to be rude.
Alice nodded.
Of course.
The calm, polite mask was rigidly back in place, but now Alice was very sure that it was a mask. She began to think seriously about killing her, but was there any way she could get away with it? Did anyone see her come here? Could she feed the body to Gronk?
I am being logical, Melissa continued in a calm and measured voice. If Waldo had actually been a white mage, as he pretends, he never would have married you. Believe me, I know. Even if I left, we would still be married. There was no divorce in my country. Marriage is for life. The same is true in Avalon. Very few countries permit marriages to be dissolved.
Then is a man allowed to have more than one wife in your country?
Don't be disgusting. They only have harems in places like the Caliphate or Alteroth.
That little bit of information slid past Alice's notice.
Then how could you marry him? Once Waldo is enrolled in the Order, your marriage will simply not be recognized.
So you'll just pretend it never happened.
If my Order does not acknowledge a thing, then it does not exist. You should be glad. The other solution is simpler, but you wouldn't enjoy it. Go back to whatever tavern or whorehouse you come from, and forget Waldo. Or better yet, sell yourself in one of the brothels here. With that obscene body of yours, you'd be rich in a few months.
I'm not a whore! I've been with exactly one man in my life, and he is the only one I will ever be with. We love each other. Waldo loves me, not you.
That doesn't matter.
Melissa took the leather pouch tied to her belt and held it out to Alice.
Here is 20 gold guilders, a fortune, more than enough to begin a new and comfortable life anywhere in the world. Take it and go, barmaid. Believe me, it's for your own good.
Alice stomped over to the door and threw it open. She was only barely able to keep her tail or fangs from appearing.
Get out!
Melissa gave a sad shake of her head.
Some people simply don't appreciate kindness. Well, perhaps you do truly love him.
She walked out the door.
But then, don't they say that all true love must end in tragedy?
Melissa left, and Alice slammed the door shut behind her. About a half hour later, a messenger from the Queen arrived. Mattis wanted to know if Alice would like to join her for a nice, long bath. Chapter 16. What do you want?
Fool! Idiot! Incompetent! A goblin could outsmart you!
Lysnam roared. Fournette flinched at each shout. He'd been summoned to the guild because of the massive wager he'd collected yesterday. The guildmaster was screaming abuse at him, while other members looked on scowling.
How could you have accepted her wager, you moronic horse-dung sweeper?
But, master, what else was I supposed to do? We honor all bets.
Don't quote our motto back to me, Lysnam roared. Can you do basic math?
Fournette swallowed. He could guess where this was headed.
Yes, master.
Then tell me, what is 10,000 times 100?
1,000,000,
Fournette answered in a small voice.
1,000,000! And do you think we have 1,000,000 gold marks to spare?
But no gaming house in Torikai has ever refused a bet, ever. When I became manager, I was specifically told to never turn down any wager, no matter how large.
He turned appealing eyes to the other mages.
I was only doing my job.
You're fired, Lysnam said. Get out of this hole. Get out of this city, and get out of this country. Be glad I don't have you skinned alive.
Lysnam knew he'd done nothing wrong. He'd done exactly what he was supposed to. But it was obvious there was nothing he could do or say. He bowed and left as quickly as he could. As soon as the fool was gone, Lysnam looked at Turvel.
Is Varka absolutely certain the White Mage's servant is an ogre?
Turvel nodded.
He is. He's spitting mad about it, too. Says if it weren't for the White Mage being there, he'd have killed the beast yesterday.
Assuming he could, Verde said. I still find it hard to believe a White Mage would use a monster, and a great monster at that.
Is it easier or harder to believe than having him conspire with Drow?
Lysnam asked. Verde looked disgusted.
I always knew the Whites were underhanded and dangerous, but I never imagined they would stoop this low.
Things to the south must be even worse than they seem, Rodo said.
Cavan turned and glared at Turvel.
We should never have used Vark in the first place. I said it was a mistake.
Well, how else are we going to rig the tournament?
Turvel shot back.
You can't bribe people to throw a match when losing means death. I didn't hear too many complaints over the last 6 years, especially since we all got to pocket the prize money.
4 major tournaments were held each year in the arena, one on the Queen's birthday, and one on each of the major holidays. The guild managed the tournaments and were responsible for covering all the bets, but it was the crown that provided the reward to the tournament champion. Since monsters were barred from competing inside the wall, Varka could only fight with the guild's cooperation. When Turvel brought the Minotaur to them, they'd made a deal. Varka could keep 1/10 of all the prizes he won. The guild members would split the rest. In exchange, they would daily recast an illusion on him and maintain the fiction he was just a fearsome warrior. This allowed Varka to live the life of a gladiatorial champion in the greatest city in the world, and with still more gold than most nobles. The guild not only collected 9/10 of the prize money, but could set the odds so that almost all the bets were on the underdogs. It was an absolutely beautiful system that profited everyone involved. Until now.
Maybe Varka will still win, Verde said hopefully. I heard she's been training with Restus and barely knows what she's doing.
Don't be an idiot, Lysnam snapped. You really think Avalon would go this far? Bargain with Valeria, bring in a disguised ogre, and give the ogre a magical sword if she weren't deadly with it?
If she's pretending to be incompetent while training, it must be all for show. I'm sure as soon as the tournament begins, she'll suddenly remember how to use it.
Why don't we find some excuse and disqualify her? Rodo suggested.
You mean after Waldo swore an oath in court, and the Queen publicly declared his servant could fight?
Cavan shook his head.
That would put us in direct opposition with the Queen.
We can't do that.
He even got the Queen to summon him to court and give him a royal audience without asking, Galen said. He openly insulted Garibaldi without upsetting the Queen, and got her to accept his plotting with Valeria. Have you ever heard of a White Mage who could manipulate things so easily?
Lysnam nodded.
He's clever, that one. He plays the fool, but then pulls strings without anyone even noticing. He must be one of the best agents Avalon has.
And his so-called wife is now seducing the Queen,
Verde said.
Shameless! Utterly shameless!
Turvel snorted in disgust.
Like that's hard to do.
Do you think she's really his wife?
Verde wondered.
Of course not, Turvel said. They obviously just recruited the most beautiful woman they could find, and brought her here to bring Mattis to their side. Would you do that to your actual wife?
Seven hells, yes. You've met Sheila. I'd give her to Varka if it meant I'd had a few days without nagging.
Wouldn't work, Rhodo said with a smirk. She scares even him.
That made everyone but Lysnum laugh.
This isn't a time for jokes, Lysnum reminded them. We're facing a real disaster. If the ogre wins, that means we owe Valeria 1,000,000 gold marks or 2,000,000,000 copper marks. If we emptied our vaults, sold every building we own, sold every contract and every piece of property, we still couldn't raise a third of that. Valeria will take everything and all of us will be debt servants for the rest of our days.
If we must, we could borrow the money from the crown, Galen suggested.
How is that any better? Lysnum asked. We'd just be the property of Mattis instead of Valeria.
Would you rather belong to the queen or to the drow?
Neither. I'd rather be rich and powerful and see my guild rich and powerful, Lysnum said. We need to find an answer.
We could just dispel the illusion and let everyone see the white brought an ogre,
Verde said.
I know it breaks our law, but we can say we did it to protect the citizens from a great monster.
Wonderful solution, Cavan said with a sneer. And what happens when the whites do the same with Varka? Not only will everyone know that we've had a great monster here for 6 years, but every single person who placed a bet on anyone else in any of the tournaments will say they were cheated.
We'll have broken thousands of contracts, Rhodo said. That will destroy the guild as much as failing to pay off the bet to Valeria would.
Looking embarrassed, Verde nodded and lowered his head.
We have to find a solution that doesn't involve breaking any contracts, Lysnum said.
Why are we dancing around this? Cavan said. There's obviously only one solution, and we all know it. We have to kill the ogre.
You volunteering? Rhodo asked. Killing an ogre is dangerous, and none of us are combat mages.
When we need people killed, when do we ever do it ourselves?
Cavan answered.
If you have the gold, you can always find someone to do the dirty work for you.
White mages are even deadlier than great monsters, Rhodo said.
He looked around the room.
Do we really want to make an enemy of one?
They're already the enemy, Cavan said. They're the ones attacking us.
We're not going to touch either Rabbit or Cornwall, Lysnum said. But how much offense can Avalon take if something happens to a servant of one of their members? Especially since there won't be any direct connection between us and whoever does it.
But it's still dangerous, Verde said.
What would you like us to do instead? Lysnum demanded. Do nothing and let the ogre fight? Risk losing everything?
Couldn't we at least try and come to some sort of arrangement first?
Verde asked.
Bribe him?
Cavan asked with disbelief.
It won't work. Whites are fanatics. Can we at least try?
Verde asked.
What is there to lose?
Lysnum frowned but nodded.
There's no harm in at least making the offer. Given what we already know, it's not as if he can accuse us of anything. The worst he can do is say no, and then we're just back to killing his pet.
Waldo was alone in the room the queen had provided him and Alice. Bell had left to train with Restus before the horrible ball of fire was in the sky. A young woman named Fia, who was dressed as a maid and had a great ass, had invited Alice to join the queen once again. Alice had been more than reluctant to agree. Waldo had needed to remind her that given their situation, they really could not afford to offend Queen Mattis, that a favor from her might potentially make the difference between life and death. When that hadn't convinced her, he told her they could do the slave master and the innocent slave girl tonight. He even promised to be especially rough with her. Alice had gone with Fia, and he'd been left on his own.
The sacrifices I make to take care of everyone, Waldo thought.
During their journeys, Alice had almost gotten no chance to spend time with other women. He'd expected her to be thrilled to get to enjoy the company of an actual queen, even one who was blessed by the gods with youth and beauty. But all through the day yesterday, he'd sensed her discomfort and nervousness. Late in the afternoon, the queen had done something to fill Alice with absolute fury and a good deal of fear. Waldo had asked about it, but Alice had refused to tell him what had happened. She had, however, delivered one swift kick to his ass and told him he deserved it. When he and Bell had told her about Varka, she'd been adamant they leave the city and get as far away as they could. The fact she was ready to just write off all the gold they'd invested proved how serious she was. Surprisingly, it had been Bell who'd immediately rejected the idea.
"You think I'm going to run away from one stupid minotaur?"
Bell had said with a violent shake of her head.
"Like any ogre would be afraid of a cow."
"But he's a great monster, too," Alice had argued, "and he's been here for years, so he must have a lot more experience."
"Doesn't matter, sweetie. I'm not running away from some big old cow. If they heard, all the other ogres would make fun of me. Besides, I can't let down Master."
"Thank you, Bell," Waldo said. "When this is all over, I promise to give you a good beating."
"Really, Master?"
Bell clasped her hands together and jumped up and down, making the floor shake. Waldo had nodded, and Alice had groaned. So, Waldo was free to do as he pleased today. Through the bond, he could sense boredom from Bell and a tremendous amount of embarrassment from Alice. Why was Alice always feeling embarrassed when she was in the Queen's company? Was it because her looks were genuine while the Queen's weren't? He wished she would learn to be less self-conscious and just accept the fact she was attractive. Since he had nothing better to do, Waldo thought he would wander the great market and see if anything interesting caught his eye. The Gold City also had an herbal shop that catered to the local guild and visiting mages. He could finally stock up on mandrake, devil grass, and other potion ingredients. As he prepared to leave, he sensed a mage approaching his door. Waldo paused and waited for the inevitable knock on his door. What he got was the door swinging open, a white mage stepping inside, and immediately slamming it shut.
"You are coming with me today," Melissa said the instant the door was closed.
She seemed to completely ignore the wand pointed at her. Waldo skittered back a couple steps.
"What do you want?"
"What do I want?" she repeated with a furious shake of her head.
"To begin with, I would like you to stop embarrassing my order. I know you hate me and the Order of Mist, and you seem to make a sport of mocking us. But you've taken things too far, beyond too far. Do you understand what you've done?"
Waldo opened his mouth. Melissa continued.
"You openly met with the drow. You allowed your false servant to participate in the vile blood sport they practice here. You freely confirmed these actions in front of Madis and 9 other sovereigns. And if all that were not enough, you declared that my order seeks to rule the world."
"Well, you have to admit at least that part is true." Even though he was the one with the wand, Waldo felt very threatened. He considered summoning his familiars back to his side. He could do that with just one word. The problem was that it would reveal their nature to everyone. Humans could not summon one another. Melissa was glaring at him.
"Is that another joke? Is all this just one huge joke? Do you want to die, Waldo? Is that it? If you prefer a grave to a long and meaningful life, tell me so."
"Ah, you do see I'm the one with the wand? Shouldn't I be the one asking if you want to die?" Melissa grabbed her hair with both hands.
"I'm trying to save you, Waldo, but you are making it very, very difficult for me. I've lost count of how many death sentences you have earned. Just wearing that robe is enough. If it weren't for the love potion and what it's done to me, I would have killed you on sight. And if I somehow failed, every white mage in this part of the world would be hunting you. I lied to the Order to help you. I betrayed my vows and broke faith with all my brothers and sisters. I have become your accomplice and committed crimes that would earn me death. And I did it all for your sake. To get you a pardon and a chance to redeem yourself. Everything I've done to try and save you. I keep telling you, I don't want to be saved."
Melissa let go of her hair and balled her hands up into fists.
"That's why you're going to spend the day with me performing acts of charity and helping the poor. You've lived a selfish existence up until now, but I must believe it's not too late for you. Maybe if you do some good works and see just how rewarding it is to help others, you'll begin to understand your greater purpose."
Going out and performing acts of insanity with her did not sound appealing at all. "I'll have to decline, and since I have the wand, you can't make me."
"You think not? If you refuse to come with me, Waldo, I will use a communication spell to report to the council. I will tell them exactly what you've done here. I've no doubt that not only will your pardon be immediately revoked, but that I will be ordered to execute you by any means. And love potion or not, I will obey that order."
Melissa stopped and took a deep breath. She took a moment to try and straighten her hair. When she continued, it was with a calm that was as thin as a spider's silk.
"Will you come with me?"
Saying no was clearly not an option. His choices were to either go with her and join in her mad activities, or try and kill her. "You realize this is an act of pure charity."
"Of course, that's the whole point."
Waldo finally put his wand away. "All right, let's go and help the poor. I'm sure it won't be as horrible and boring as I think." Chapter 17, The God of the White Mages. Melissa took him out of the Gold City, through one of the western gates. They had a cart pulled by a donkey filled with loaves of bread she'd purchased herself. They went into the rat's nest along the Silver Road. They went about 6 blocks past the wall. That let them put the inns and storefronts and most of the businesses behind them. Melissa brought the donkey to a stop in front of the bleary and run-down hovels that passed for homes in the rat's nest.
"Free bread!" Melissa called out, sounding excited. "Free bread!"
The locals rushed towards them like a stampeding herd. They were dirty, thin, and ravenous, like the namesakes of this part of Torikai. Waldo handed out the bread from his side of the cart, his only wish to be done with this nonsense as quickly as possible. The fact that people were grateful and thanking and blessing him over and over meant nothing to Waldo. He couldn't imagine why anyone in their right mind would want to waste their time doing this, never mind their silver.
"Many of the poor can't afford to feed themselves since the price of bread has galloped away,"
Melissa told him as she handed loaves down to eager hands. As soon as anyone got bread, they wrapped both arms around it and ran away as fast as they could.
"The queen doesn't do anything to help them. When the winter comes, many of them will starve.
And when they do, their bodies won't even be reanimated. They'll just rot away to nothing. How wasteful."
"This is just awful," Waldo said, doing his best to sound sincere.
He seemed successful as Melissa nodded her head.
"My order and I do what we can to help, but it's no more than a drop in the bucket. The queen could easily afford to feed them all, but she doesn't care."
"I don't blame her." Waldo handed a loaf down to a woman with gray and brown hair. She took it with one hand. The other she placed behind her head, palm up.
"The love of the rabbit unto you," she said,
and then hurried away. Waldo blinked. She had not been part of the caravan. The woman was gone before he could think of a reply, and more people crowded in close with their hands out, begging for food. He wondered who had told her about the great rabbit as he passed down more loaves. "The ruler doesn't have an obligation to her subjects," Waldo said. "The only obligation is for the ruled to obey their ruler. Anything they receive should be seen as a gift, not as any sort of requirement. After all, it's not like the subjects get to pick and choose who wears the crown. Whoever sits on the throne is there because they have the power to be there, not because commoners want them."
Melissa looked over at him and frowned. "Were you raised in a nobleman's house? That's exactly the sort of argument I would expect to hear from a petty lord abusing his serfs."
Waldo grinned. "I can say with absolute honesty that my family has no titles and is in no way noble." Which was true. He'd been born and raised in Castle Corpse Lover and was heir to one of the 7 great houses of Alteroth. His mother held the power of life and death over more people than the queen here did. But the great houses of Alteroth did not use noble titles. There were no kings or lords in his country. The houses didn't hold authority because of blood rights and ancient lineages. The families who ruled did so because they had the raw power to do so. The whole point of the first quest was to make sure every single member of a ruling house was strong enough for that responsibility. Except for the poison daggers, of course.
"Then coming from one of the lower classes, you should have more sympathy for the plight of these people," Melissa said.
"I don't," Waldo told her. "If they don't have enough money, then they need to find work or sell themselves into slavery."
"There is not enough work, and there is no slavery here. A strong, healthy man can always get hired by one of the fighting pits, and a pretty young girl can find work in a pleasure house. If you are the head of a family, you may be able to get a loan from a merchant house. The amount is usually 5 silver marks, but you must pay back 7 within 1/2 a year. If you fail to do so, your entire family will be put into bondage and forced to work off the debt." The owner of the debt contract can force them to do whatever they like and pay as little as they want. In effect, anyone imprisoned for debt will spend the rest of their life working it off.
I thought you said this country doesn't have slavery.
They refer to it as being a debt servant, but it's slavery in all but name.
That reminded Waldo of his original meeting with Alice. She'd been called an indentured servant, but he'd been forced to buy her exactly as if she were property. He also thought about the family he saw being led away bound in ropes.
Well, that is still better than starving, isn't it? It isn't even an option for most. The merchants will only lead to families with two healthy parents and at least two healthy children. Most are unmarried or too old or frail without strong children.
Then why don't they leave and go somewhere they can find work?
Many of these people came here from some place even worse, Melissa said. They or their parents or grandparents aren't from Torikai. They came here as refugees from goblin raids or wars or from places suffering drought or famine. They came here thinking it was their best chance at a better life for themselves and their children. And instead, they have this.
She waved an arm at the crowd and at the half-built sheds where they resided.
These people have nowhere else to go.
Then let them die and make room for those who are stronger.
He was sure Melissa would not appreciate his common sense.
Then what is the point to giving people bread if they're doomed no matter what?
Even if you can't solve a problem completely, you should still do as much as you can. It's better to light a single torch than curse the darkness.
Are you sure? Waldo asked. It also makes you a target for things that can see in the dark.
Waldo saw a man make the sign of the rabbit before taking a loaf from her. Melissa didn't react to it, and Waldo didn't say anything to him. Like the woman with the one-handed sign, Waldo knew the man hadn't traveled with him.
When the last loaf was handed out, they were still besieged by the locals.
"I am sorry," Melissa called out to them, "but that is all I have. There is no more bread today."
The crowd seemed to find it hard to believe. Many among them kept asking if there wasn't just one more loaf hidden at the bottom of the cart. Some asked if she would have more bread tomorrow. A few of them cried and asked her if there was anything she could do for them.
"I will do all that I can," Melissa said. "Alas, I am not the queen."
Though disappointed and hungry, the people dispersed.
"Well, this was immensely enjoyable," Waldo lied. "I suppose we can go back now?"
Melissa shook her head. "No. We should walk among the people and talk to them."
"Why?"
Waldo asked in bewilderment. He could not imagine a greater waste of his time.
"To listen to their complaints, to show them sympathy, to tell them we care,
to tell them how much better their lives would be if only Avalon were in control of this country," Waldo said for her.
"I merely make it clear that I and the Order care about their situation. I leave it to the people to draw their own conclusions."
"You are deliberately undercutting the Queen and trying to stir up dissension among her people." Waldo had no real interest in Queen Mattis and this kingdom beyond the gold and knowledge he hoped to acquire, but he had a general distrust of the White Mages.
"I am simply trying to provide comfort to people who need it. If they are in a wretched situation, that is a reflection on their ruler, not on me or my order."
She climbed down from the driver's seat on the cart. She took hold of the donkey's bridle and began to lead them down the street. Waldo climbed down as well. "Hard to believe so many people in power distrust you, since your motivations are so pure."
"I'm only telling people the truth.
The truth that suits you.
Do you approve of Mattis and how she rules here? She never leaves the inner city. She won't even look at her own subjects. She cares nothing about them. When I told Mattis her people needed bread, she answered me they could eat candy instead. What sort of queen is that?"
Waldo shrugged. "One who knows how to prioritize. Why is it your concern anyway? Avalon is 3,000 miles from here."
"A human life is precious and should be defended."
"Yes. When we first met and you told me you were going to execute me, my immediate reaction was to think how much you value life."
"You are a thief and thieves should be killed. Even though we treasure life, the laws must be upheld."
"Had I known half your crimes, I'd have killed you the instant I saw you." "And if the effects of love potion wore off, you'd execute me this instant, wouldn't you?"
"Yes,"
Melissa said without hesitation.
"Can you understand why I'm not going to Avalon with you?"
Melissa gave him a flat look.
"You are, Waldo. Avalon or the grave, those are your choices."
Like there's that much difference, Waldo thought. He spotted a young boy of 10 or so with a single wooden crutch. He was hobbling up the street with his mother. His right leg looked withered. Waldo walked up to them and spoke to his mother. Your son's leg, has it been that way since birth, or did he suffer an accident? The mother was startled.
He was run over by a wagon 3 years ago, my lord. I was afraid the leg would have to be cut off.
Waldo nodded. Good. If it's the result of an injury, that will make it easier. She and her son were in ragged and faded homespun. There didn't seem much point in asking if she could pay for healing. I will heal your son's leg. Hold his hand. This will be painful. He looked down at the boy. Try to be brave. The boy gave an excited nod, and his mother took firm hold of him. Waldo pulled up the trouser leg. The flesh beneath was pale and dirty. Just below the knee, it bent at a sharp angle, and he could clearly make out the bone underneath the skin. Waldo put both hands on the boy's leg.
Istes carnes, cruz ad restituere.
Waldo's hands glowed, and he felt the mana flow into the broken appendage. The boy gave an immediate cry of pain. Forcing bones to straighten and mend and knitting muscle together was not pleasant. His mother told him to be brave and that he was blessed. Waldo focused on his work and did his best to ignore the child's screeching. Repairing injuries, even ones that were years old and scarred over, was relatively simple. Curing an illness was always much more challenging. It only took a couple minutes and the leg was straight and all the muscles in perfect working order.
There you are. Good as new.
Waldo wiped his hands to try and get the dirt and grime off them. The boy stood there, gingerly standing on his leg without the now discarded crutch. He took a couple cautious steps as his mother stood there crying.
I can walk,
the boy shouted.
Obviously, Waldo said.
Thank you,
the mother cried and tried to hug him. Waldo backpedaled in a nick of time and just barely escaped her grasp. He held up both hands.
That's all right. I'm happy to help. Unity, justice, and peace and all that.
The woman nodded and embraced her son, thanking him again and again. When Waldo noted all the mundanes on the street staring wide-eyed, he was not surprised. They were only mundanes, after all. Even if they lived in a city with a huge fake gold wall, you would still expect them to be amazed at the sight of genuine magic. Commoners were easy to impress. What took Waldo by surprise was when he turned around and saw Melissa standing there, her mouth hanging open, both hands pressed to her heart.
What?
Waldo asked. The way she was staring at him, he felt almost as uncomfortable as when she'd barged into his room this morning.
You're a healer,
she whispered, barely loud enough for him to hear.
Yes, I am, he muttered.
It was not something to be proud of.
You're a healer,
she said again. Her lips turned up, and there was a look of ecstasy in her eyes. He'd heard those words before in his life, and they'd always been an accusation.
Yes, I have a talent in healing, a strong one. It's what I was born with. It's not as if I asked for it.
And then she said the cruelest, most hurtful thing any person could ever say to him.
You would make a great white mage.
His back went stiff, and he glared at her. His immediate thought was to yell at her, to go and fuck herself. But the look on her face and the way she'd said those words didn't match their cruel and hateful nature.
That's a compliment, isn't it?
You think you're complimenting me, don't you? I understand it now,
Melissa spoke as if not hearing him.
This is the God's will. All of it has been the God's will. The one we follow wants me to bring you home so that you may serve him.
No, Waldo thought. This is definitely more frightening than when she threatened me this morning.
Thanks so much for doing this, my lord.
I am no lord, Waldo muttered. My proper title is master.
Thank you very much, master.
Waldo's only response was a grunt. Now he was on his knees in front of some dirty, garbage-choked, rat-infested alley, his hands on the scabbed feet of some filthy commoner. He was using his magic to heal the blisters on them.
Mother would be so proud, Waldo thought.
Giving away free bread had been bad enough, but when Melissa had realized he had a talent in healing, she'd started to shout for anyone who was sick or injured to come forward. Just as with the shouts of free bread, a horde of dirty peasants had materialized. It had been like his mother summoning undead. Waldo had then spent his time healing bones, treating fevers and coughs, dealing with rashes, blisters, and infections. Every person he healed walked away praising and thanking him. Waldo would have traded all their kind words and thoughts for a single piece of silver. The only people he'd been unable to help were a man with a club foot and two people who'd had the wasting sickness. Healing magic could not remove any illness or injury with which a person was born. Wounds could be healed, but not deformities. The wasting sickness was one of those dread illnesses that could appear without warning, but which others could not catch. Waldo had no idea why healing magic had those restrictions, but it did. The light from the spell faded, and Waldo wiped his hands. The blisters were gone, and the skin on the man's feet looked smooth and unmarred. "There, it's done. Who's next?" The man bowed to him three or four times before leaving.
"Thank you. May the gods bless and keep you."
"Yes, yes, next person." From behind Waldo, Melissa spoke.
"You are most welcome. If you truly wish to thank us, then all Waldo and I ask is that you tell people about what he did for you. That is the only payment we ask."
Waldo looked over his shoulder to send her a sour expression.
"I will. I'll tell everyone, I promise."
The man walked off with a spring in his step. In his place stepped a woman with a blunt chin who was coughing. When Waldo had stopped to treat that first boy, it hadn't been done out of kindness or some sense of altruism. Waldo would have found the very idea offensive. He'd helped because he'd been bored with handing out bread, and the idea of talking to a bunch of mundanes about their problems sounded like an even greater waste of time. It had been a while since he needed to heal anyone, and it was a good idea to at least keep in practice, so he'd thought to heal one person. Waldo got to his feet and placed his hands on her.
"Ivaros et morbum frebum."
Light began to glow about his hands. Waldo didn't dislike using healing magic. It had always been his talent, and for a long time the only magic he was competent in. His issue was how embarrassing this was. Where he was from, healing magic was not something to flaunt. When a person needed to be treated, it was done in private and then usually forgotten. It was certainly never done right out in the open where the whole world could see. An entire crowd of dirty peasants was watching, as well as Melissa. He glanced back over his shoulder at her. She was staring intently, a look of pride and admiration on her face. It reminded him of the way Alice would look at him sometimes. People referred to healing as white magic, and among white mages, it was the most honored and respected of all the talents.
"Every counselor in the Order of Mist is a healer," Melissa had told him. "Only a few are as gifted as you are. Once you join the Order, you'll be one of its leaders in a few short years."
That her order was led by healers was just more proof that all white mages were insane. As humiliating as all this was, there was always a certain satisfaction in healing people. Waldo was an excellent healer. Even Walter had admitted that much. It was only natural to enjoy doing something you were good at. Waldo would have just preferred doing it where everyone couldn't see. Getting paid would have also made it more tolerable. As Waldo was healing the woman's cough, a group of more than 30 men came walking up the Silver Road to where he and Melissa were. They stood and waited respectfully until Waldo finished treating her. When he faced them, Waldo saw a familiar individual up at the front. As one, the entire crowd put their hands behind their heads and spoke.
"The love of the rabbit unto you."
Waldo was absolutely delighted. He made the same gesture.
"And unto you as well."
Melissa stood by watching all this in confusion.
"Darren," Waldo said, "I see you've been busy spreading the word about the great rabbit."
"I have, Master Rabbit," Darren said. "The people in the rat's nest feel that the gods of the realm have abandoned them, and are ready to embrace a more caring god. And given how many feel about white mages, they are happy to convert to your faith."
"Wait," Melissa stepped forward. "Convert to his faith?"
"Yes, to the god of Avalon and the white mages."
"What?"
Darren turned to her and placed his hands behind his head like a pair of rabbit ears.
"The love of the rabbit unto you."
Melissa stood there, blinking back at him. Darren glanced over at Waldo.
"Did I do it wrong?"
"No," Waldo assured.
You did it perfectly.
Then, why, the ways of Avalon are strange and enigmatic, Waldo told him. You must not question them. If a white mage does not return your greeting, or even if they pretend to be completely ignorant of our divine herbivore lord, just know there is a reason for it. The important thing to remember is that the clergy is always right. You must place your complete and total faith in them, even if what they tell you makes absolutely no sense or contradicts the basic principles of the faith. Trust that your religious leaders know better than you do what the god wants. The absolute best way to demonstrate your faith is to do whatever the clergy tells you without question.
Yes, master.
Darren said nothing. Melissa gaped at Waldo.
What are you talking about?
You see, Waldo said to Darren, strange and enigmatic. If you want to follow Kukukachu, you must accept that his ways are not your ways.
Darren again nodded. Master Rabbit, me and the other disciples have been spreading the word and growing the herd. Many are flocking to join in the worship of the Great Rabbit, but most of them are facing hard times. Some are going to starve this winter. Is there anything that can be done for them?
Avalon, Melissa said, we'll do what we can to help the people here. But we can only do so much. Unless your queen takes a more active role in caring for your people, I am afraid things will remain as they are.
Or, Waldo said, you can tell all the members of the herd to beg, borrow, and steal every coin they can, and bet it all on Belle of Tarsus to win the Queen's birthday tournament.
What? Melissa gasped. You can't tell people to wager on a blood sport. That tournament is nothing but an excuse to commit murder.
Yes, it is, and it's just awful. Murder is bad, but, Waldo said, since the tournament is still going to happen regardless, and Belle is going to win it, the Great Rabbit would definitely want the members of his herd to profit from it.
No one should ever profit from murder, Melissa said.
Now that's just being naive, Waldo said. Darren looked between them.
You are both white mages, and you are each telling me to do the opposite. Who am I supposed to listen to? Who am I supposed to listen to?
Whose advice do you want to listen to? Waldo asked.
Yours, Darren said.
I'd rather take a chance than do nothing.
Then you have your answer, Waldo said. Obviously, Kukukachu imparted some of his wisdom on you. Clearly, this is the god's will.
Darren's eyes widened, and he nodded excitedly.
Thank you, master. I understand now.
Darren bowed to him, and to Melissa, and turned to leave. The entire mob that had arrived with him left as well, and he was eagerly explaining things to them as they went.
What was all that? Melissa demanded.
That was me trying to help people, Waldo said. Isn't that the whole point of what you wanted to do today, with the bread and the healing and telling everyone how wonderful Avalon is?
Your idea of helping is to tell people to risk what little they have on a game where men murder each other for the entertainment of the masses?
Yes. I sense you have a problem with that.
First, Melissa said with her face turning red, anything connected to those games is utterly immoral, and that includes your own involvement. But even leaving that completely aside, your ogre is not certain to win.
I'll have to disagree with you there. Belle is very sure she'll win.
Why do you refer to it as a she, when we both know it's a male?
It makes Belle happy, and I try my best to be good to her.
Melissa shook her head. Varka isn't just a simple human gladiator. He is much more.
Wait a minute, Waldo gasped. You know Varka is a minotaur?
Is that what he is? Well, that's interesting. And no, I didn't know his specific race, only that he was some sort of great monster. My order is known for years, after all. It only requires casting a basic detection spell. If I hadn't already met your barmaid and known which of your servants was the ogre, I would have cast one to find out. Be glad the local guild here is so lax, or they'd have known as well. I suspect they wouldn't be pleased about it.
She doesn't realize Alice is a succubus, Waldo thought. That's probably for the best.
If you knew the truth, why didn't you tell everyone?
We tried. The queen specifically asked us not to.
So the queen knows too?
He was surprised when Melissa shook her head.
No. Her advisor told her it was a lie, and she chose to believe him.
The previous ambassador offered to remove the illusion and prove it, but that would mean violating their precious law, and might have done more harm than good. Torukai is very important to our plans. It was decided not to risk a major diplomatic incident.
Important to your plans in what way?
The point is your ogre is far from certain to win.
Melissa ignored his question.
If you knew the truth, why didn't you tell me?
Melissa grinned.
I did say you weren't as smart as you thought.
Alice tells me that, or something close, every other day.
Why didn't you tell me Varka was a great monster?
And why exactly would I do that? She asked.
Do you think I want you to profit from having that beast in your service? Or from your involvement in this disgusting tournament?
The one and only positive I can see in it is that at least one abomination is guaranteed to perish. The only better outcome is having them kill each other.
Well, Belle expects to win, and I have faith in her.
I don't care who wins. They are both equally vile creatures who should not be walking the earth.
I do, however, care about those poor people you told to gamble on the outcome.
How could you do that?
Simple. When Belle wins, all the followers who bet on her will have enough money to at least survive the winner.
Some may even win a small fortune, and in their minds, they'll owe it all to the Great Rabbit. Not only will their faith in him be absolute, but I am sure word will spread and many will want to follow him.
And what happens if the Minotaur wins?
Waldo shrugged.
If I lose Belle, I'm not going to care about a bunch of mundanes. And if I did care, I could always say it wasn't the gods' fault, that it happened because the followers were all sinful. As far as I can tell, that's how it usually works. The god gets the credit for everything that's good, the followers get the blame for everything that's bad.
That is a cynical and self-serving view. You are completely and utterly selfish.
Thank you.
Melissa scrubbed a hand over her face.
If all that weren't bad enough, you've convinced people that your god is the god of the entire order. If not of all Avalon. I can understand if you believe in this rabbit god, but if you are going to pretend to be a white mage, you can't share your beliefs with others. You haven't been taught yet, but we believe in the one we follow. He is the patron and lord of Avalon, and we are his chosen people.
She pointed a finger at her own eyes.
We don't share our beliefs with others, for his is ours alone to worship.
What about the people who live in the Alliance countries?
They can worship as they please. It's enough that they follow and uphold our laws. As I said, we are his chosen people. We alone are worthy of offering him worship and devotion. We teach them about unity, justice, and peace. That is enough.
Then I don't see the problem.
The problem is that some people now believe we worship this rabbit god of yours. The one we follow might take offense.
Oh, you don't need to worry about that. Waldo waved it away. It turns out the gods don't take offense that easily. They have surprisingly good senses of humor. Believe me, I know. My gods are always laughing at me.
I don't care if your rabbit god has a mocking nature.
Oh, I wasn't referring to him. The great rabbit isn't a real god. I made him up.
What?
I mean, I presume he's not real. I don't claim to know every god in existence. But I made up all the stories I told Darren and the others.
So you tricked a bunch of innocent people into worshipping a god that doesn't even exist?
That's right. Melissa's mouth hung open, and she stared at him in horror.
So, on top of everything else, you're also a cult leader?
He grinned. I had no idea it would grow so quickly. I only converted 7 people. You really have to admire their devotion to the cause.
That's because they truly believe they're serving a god.
I know, he said, voice ringing with pride. I made up some really delightful stories. Melissa stared at him.
How could you do that?
Waldo shrugged. I was bored. To Waldo's relief, Melissa decided he'd done enough for one day. She warned him, though, they would be going out again tomorrow. She seemed more insistent than ever that she had to save him. As he returned to his quarters, he could sense Alice was already there, while Belle was still training. He entered the room and shut the door behind him.
I had the absolute worst day today, he declared, without even bothering to look over at Alice.
Really? Tell me about it, darling.
Well, first, Melissa came barging in here threatening me and demanding that I perform acts of madness for the public. She made me waste time handing out bread to people who are probably just going to end up starving anyway.
Then I accidentally revealed to her I was a healer. That was a big mistake.
Oh?
He nodded his head, still not looking at her.
She actually made me heal commoners in public, where people could see. It was humiliating. I spent hours doing the most embarrassing things, where Melissa and others could watch.
Oh, poor darling. That sounds just awful.
It was. You have absolutely no idea what it's like to have someone deliberately humiliate you like that.
He turned around to look at her.
It was utterly...
Waldo abruptly stopped as soon as he saw his wife.
Alice, why are you dressed like that?
Alice was wearing a cat costume. On top of her head were a pair of furry cat ears. Whiskers had been drawn on her cheeks with charcoal. On her hands were fur mittens that imitated paws. On her feet were fur boots. She wore a black and white outfit that showed off her thighs and revealed a lot of cleavage, and attached to her rear was a long, furry tail.
The queen dressed all her maids up as pets and insisted I join in. I had to crawl about on all fours meowing. I had to play fight and tumble around with the other pets. I had to rub up against her leg while she patted my head and stroked my back and told me I was a good pussy. She even made me lap up a bowl of milk. I spent the entire day pretending to be a cat while the queen watched.
Hearing that, Waldo frowned.
So, you got to play dress-up with the queen and her maids while I was being embarrassed? I hope you really appreciate how lucky you are.
When Alice started beating and kicking him, he had no idea why.
Chapter 18. A Training Partner. Melissa was on her knees, reciting her morning prayers.
There is but one path. Those who abandon it are lost. There is but one justice. Those who are wicked shall be punished. There is but one world, which belongs only to man. Those of a different flesh shall be purged. There is but one true God, whose sacred name we shall know only in the hour of our deaths. The Creator, the Father, the Mother, the Protector, the Judge, the Punisher, the Maker and Unmaker, the One who is all things and all times, the One we must follow. I beseech thee, grant me mercy, for I am frail. Grant me strength, for I am weak. Grant me wisdom, for I am foolish.
She almost chuckled at the final line of the prayer. Foolish didn't begin to describe the decisions she'd made since that fateful day in Middleton. She knew that everything she felt for Waldo was a lie. The love she felt for him was as real as the ridiculous throne Mattis sat on, or the gold wall. Yet despite that, she had lied to Minister Barrows and convinced him to extend a pardon to Waldo. She'd betrayed the Order and everything she'd believed in because she couldn't bear the thought of losing him. Melissa shut her eyes and wished she could understand. Since the time she was a child, she'd been brought up with faith in the One We Follow, and in his divine plan to restore the world and purify it. Even before she'd learned her first incantation, she'd been taught the duty she owed to the Order of Mist and to all the people of this world. Magical ability was a rare trait in humans, and those who could wield it had a responsibility to use it for the greater good. She believed in the cause. She believed in unity, justice, and peace. She believed that she and all her brothers and sisters in the Order were fighting to create a better world. A perfect world. And every sacrifice was worth it, because one day they would make this world a paradise it was meant to be, without monsters or undead or evil. She would not live to see it, but it didn't matter, because she knew that one day it would come to pass, and it would all be worth it. And because of a mouthful of love potion, she had thrown all of that away, and made the survival of a thief, imposter, blasphemer, and cult leader her priority. All her faith, all her devotion and belief, had been thrown aside for the sake of a man who by any standard deserved death. She shut her eyes and tried to find peace.
It was the God's will. It had to be. There was no other explanation.
That was what she held on to when she lied to the minister. She had been brought up to believe that everything was part of their God's plan. Even the failures and defeats served a greater purpose. They taught the faithful to endure and never question the divine will.
Bringing Waldo into the Order and redeeming him had to be the god's will. Because if it wasn't... Melissa shook her head and tried to banish the thought. She couldn't let herself doubt. Everything was part of the divine plan.